Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
This episode may contain explicit language. Welcome to Karen Feeding, the show where we parent together. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's 11, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of three littles, Henry, who's 12, Oliver, who's 9, and Teddy, who's 7. We live in Tokyo, Japan.
Hi, I'm Lucy Lopez. I host the Mamacita Rica podcast. I'm mother to Amelia, who's 13, Avery, who's 11, and we live in Miami.
Today on the show, Zach sits down with Dr. Nicole Schultz, a clinical professor at UC Davis, to talk about weed and the teenage brain. Listeners told us they want to understand more about the way teens are approaching drug use, and Dr. Schultz is here to help. We'll also share a round of recommendations. And then, if you're in the Slate Plus Club, we'll remember what it was like to talk about drug use when we were teens. Did DARE actually work on anyone? I guess it worked on my co-host, just not me. Here's what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
I remember being in middle school, and this is for real. I'm not even, Miami. Here we go. The only kids who could go to the DARE assembly were the kids who had the good grades.
I was like, wait, what?
Exactly.
Like it was a privilege?
If you weren't doing well in class, you weren't allowed to go to the assembly because it was like a thing because they had like a DJ and there was food and there was this and there was that. And no, you can't go to the DARE assembly unless you had the good grades. And I'm like, don't you think you want to invite the ones that don't have the great grades? Because most of them are smoking weed in the bathroom.
If you're listening on Slate Plus, thank you so much for your support. We'll catch you later for your exclusive segment. If you're not listening on Slate Plus, we hope you'll consider it. There's no better way to support the show. And when you're a member, you also get ad-free listening on all Slate podcasts. Sounds great, right? We think so too. Go to slate.com/careplus for more info. Or you can just subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts for a little less money. The choice is yours. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll see you back here in a minute. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. Do you want to update your wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune? With Quince, you can get a lineup of timeless pieces that keep you looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes on the savings to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I just got the most adorable jumpsuit from Quince. I'm going to Cancun and it's gonna be my travel outfit. And I'm so excited because it's so comfortable and cute. Definitely looks like a luxury piece. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/carefeeding for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/carefeeding to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/carefeeding.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
All right, we're back, and it's time to hear Zach's interview with Dr. Nicole Schultz of UC Davis. Zach, take it away.
Dr. Schultz, welcome to Care and Feeding.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You were the lead researcher on a study published in the journal Psychology of Addictive Behaviors about teens and cannabis. So how do you conduct research about drugs or cannabis with teenagers? What does that look like?
Yeah, so this study was actually conducted by my colleague Jason Ramirez at University of Washington, and I was involved in looking at the data in a little bit of a different way and kind of looking at my research interests within the data that he collected. But generally, the strategies that we use to talk with teens and get information about cannabis use from teens is similar to the ways that we do it with adults. So we recruit samples from our local community. We survey them with various techniques like online surveys. Sometimes we do that with interviews, having people come in and talk to us about their perceptions and their use patterns. But usually teens are pretty open and willing to talk about their use with us. So it hasn't been a big issue to get the participants that we need.
And what was the most surprising thing you learned during your research?
I think one of the most surprising things is how much cannabis use parallels that of adults. And the reasons that kids are using are pretty similar to the reasons that adults report using. One of the things about our study in particular was we were looking at something called the reinforcing value of cannabis. So essentially how valuable to youth find cannabis. And one of the ways we look at that is to ask them how much they would consume if they could get cannabis for free. And our youth tend to report much higher quantities that they would use if cannabis was free. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to speculate as to why they would say that, whether it's just they're not quite understanding what we are looking at in terms of the quantity. So do they not understand measurements of cannabis, like in grams? Maybe they only understand it in terms of joints or hits or something like that. And I also think there's an impulsivity issue that comes in where youth might say, oh, here's something that's free. Mm-hmm. Let me say I would take as much of it as possible. So that was a little bit different than what we would see in adult populations. And it's interesting to speculate as to why that would be.
Why do you think it might be?
Well, I think part of it is that they might not have that understanding of units of measurement. So cannabis is very different than alcohol in that we don't have a standard measure. You know, you can have a beer, you can have a shot, you can have a glass of wine. But there's varying ways of thinking about that with cannabis, whether that's a joint or a bowl or an edible. So there's not always a concrete way to measure cannabis use. I think sometimes with not understanding the market and the market value of cannabis, kids might just be more inclined to, you know, say I'll take it for free as much as I can and not quite understand the implications of that. So yeah, I think it comes down to like their knowledge and their perception of how much they're using and what they're saying that they would do.
Did you get into how they're getting it?
We didn't get into that in this study. Other studies have, and one of the findings that comes out from those studies is a lot of times kids are getting it for free from their friends. They're not actually purchasing it from others or from a legal market. So it is kind of interesting to understand using a measure like this where we're asking them how much they would pay for certain things when they're actually not getting it that way. They're getting it for free from their peers.
Yeah. You mentioned teens often use it for the same reason adults do. What are those reasons?
Yeah. So the big ones that come out are reasons that we call enhancement or enjoyment. So to use it to have fun, to get high, to enjoy the positive aspects of using it. The other side of that is using to cope with negative feelings or negative states. And so usually we see people who are using more for the enjoyment reasons are maybe using a little bit more frequently or using in higher quantities, but they're not usually experiencing as many problems versus people who are using it to cope with their emotions are the people who are going to experience more negative outcomes, like having difficulty at work, having difficulty with their responsibilities, having difficulty with school. So using to cope is usually an indicator that there might be other things that are going on that are difficult for that person.
Yeah, in the study, you talk about cannabis use disorder. How do you define that?
So we use a diagnostic manual to define cannabis use disorder. We do this for all mental health disorders in our field. And there's specific criteria that someone has to meet in order to be diagnosed with a cannabis use disorder. So some of it is looking at things like quantity and frequency, so how much somebody is using and how often they're using. A lot of it comes down to their level of impairment. So are they struggling to maintain their responsibilities? Are they not going to work? Are they not going to school? Are they continuing to use despite having negative consequences of their use? And that's when we start getting into disordered use, when there's some level of impairment associated with using.
When I was growing up, it was only a black market thing. But now it's so much more ubiquitous because of, you know, legalization sweeping the nation. And with that, it seems that cannabis has become a lot more potent, which is a concern. A lot of parents are like, you know, when I was a kid, it was not that strong, but now it can really zoink you. Like, what do you understand about the evolving potency and how that's impacting young people?
Yeah, I think this is a really valid concern and a place where a lot of people who are thinking about the impact of legalization are wondering about how this is going to impact things. So yes, there has been an increase in the level of THC potency across the board. And with that, you see a lot more variations in the ways that people can consume cannabis as well. So it's now included in beverages and edibles, and there's dabbing and waxing, and there's just so many methods of administration. We do know that THC potency is one of the risk factors for developing both short and long-term impairments associated with cannabis use. So things like memory deficits or changes in IQ is one thing that we see sometimes. And it can also increase the risk for psychological problems like anxiety, depression, psychosis, and can also lead to cannabis use disorder. So I do think it's a valid concern and something that you know, everyone is looking at in terms of how this is impacting the market, it's impacting youth. And it is one of the things that I think is pretty important for us to be thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, you said, you know, it can impact IQ and kids can develop, you know, psychoses, et cetera. Like, are you finding that a lot of the teens you studied are experiencing that, or is it more of a marginal impact?
So our study didn't look at that in particular. I'm kind of speaking more globally about the research base. You know, I don't know the exact level of impact on those factors. We just know that it's a risk factor. And it's also important to note that a lot of our data are correlational and not causational. So it could be other factors that right. contribute to some of these things. Like there's plenty of risk factors for psychosis, for example. We just know that things like earlier onset of use, heavier use, higher potency THC, those things are going to exacerbate those risk factors.
How likely are teens who dabble in using cannabis to develop actual use disorders? You know, there is the myth of the gateway drug, or is it not a myth?
Right. There is a risk factor there. I don't know if I can quantify that. Just to give some perspective, you know, about 4% of youth in the last year between the ages of 12 and 17 would meet criteria for a substance use disorder. And we can look and compare that to, you know, almost like between 40 and 50% of 12th graders have reported that they've tried cannabis in the last year. So it's not a super high proportion of our youth who are trying it are sort of developing a cannabis use disorder, or other substance use disorder. So again, those risk factors of the earlier that someone starts using and the heavier that someone is using, the higher potency THC contents, those are going to be risk factors for developing other substance use disorders. But, you know, I don't think a high percentage of our youth who are experimenting and trying cannabis are developing these use disorders over time.
Mm-hmm. In the background of the study, it says that nearly 31% of 12th graders have used it within the past year and more than 6% in the past month. Are those numbers going up? Do we know?
The numbers are pretty stable. So there is some very long-term data that we have, and actually our yearly use, so people who report that they've used at least once in the past year, that number is significantly declined over time, especially from like the 60s and 70s. And then we had sort of a pre-COVID or COVID dip in the number. And so we've seen a non-significant increase in that post-COVID, but, you know, it hasn't returned to some of the levels pre-COVID. So overall, it's actually lower and pretty stable right now. Daily use is going up a little bit among our youth, but overall the trends are actually down.
Yeah. Huh. Do you think there is like a sustainable or like a healthy way in which teens can use weed?
My philosophy is in what we call harm reduction. So I am not somebody who promotes an abstinence-based model for things. I think that our kids are going to explore and experiment, and that's probably not going to go away anytime soon. And so if we can think about ways to keep them safe if they're going to use, that's what I'm most interested in, right? How do we reduce the risk of serious harm if you're going to use? Whether or not there is a fully safe way to do that, you know, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that, but I do think we can explore the pathways to keep people safer if they're going to choose to use.
What do you think those pathways would be?
I think a lot of that has to do with the potency conversation. Mm-hmm. So knowing what you're using, how much you're using, who you're getting it from, are these trustworthy sources? Do you know what's in what you're using? Using in safe environments, not driving after you're using. I think that's another big thing that people struggle with the comparison between alcohol and cannabis, is that like it's okay to drive after I've smoked, or heard a lot of people tell me I'm a better driver after I've smoked. And, you know, it's just one of those like myths, and you're like, how could that possibly be true? You're stoned. So there are things like that that you can do to reduce the potential risks of somebody getting injured or having a serious adverse consequence from using.
Are you a parent?
I am a parent.
How old are your kids?
I have a 2.5-year-old now and one on the way.
Oh, okay. Congrats. Thank you. My kids are young too, so I haven't had the weed conversation with them. But what do you think parents get wrong when it comes to understanding weed use?
You know, I don't know if anyone gets it wrong. I think coming from it as a researcher, and, you know, I'm also a clinical psychologist, I think where we my struggle is just having the conversations around it, not being scared to ask our kids. Sometimes I think people worry that if they ask about it, that they're opening a door to like saying it's permissive, or that it's going to like interest their kids in trying it. And really it's kind of the opposite, right? Like if you come at it from a very non-judgmental, open way, that opens the door for your kids to have conversations with you and ask you questions and come to you when they're not sure about something. And, you know, you want your kids to call you when something goes wrong, or, you know, maybe they smoked and they're not feeling so great, versus hiding it from you and then maybe experiencing some shame or guilt around that. So I think that's one thing, is just how we approach the conversations around it. And sometimes maybe feeling scared of those conversations can be difficult for parents.
Is there anything else we should know about your research that, you know, you're talking to a bunch of concerned parents who want the best for their kids? What should they know?
I think my takeaway from my research and what I've learned in this field is that there might be a perception that everybody is doing it. And when we look at the data, that isn't quite true. So we're actually seeing these trends go down. I think coming at these conversations in an open, non-judgmental way is a great place to start. Having lots of frequent, small conversations. They don't have to be formal sit-downs. Talk about it at the dinner table. Talk about it in the car. What do you know about weed? What are your friends saying about weed? What's the perception at your school? Just kind of opening the door to these really open conversations. And I also want people to take away that there are really successful treatments and approaches to helping kids who might be struggling with their cannabis use. One thing our study was looking at in particular, or some of the implications of that study, are that if we can engage kids in more substance-free based activities, that we might see some reductions in their desire and interest in using to begin with. So how can we get them engaged in activities that we know that cannabis isn't going to be there for, like sports, clubs, other social activities that might decrease the desire to use cannabis?
As always, listeners, we want to hear from you. How are you talking to your teens about weed? Let us know by emailing carenfeedingpod@slate.com or by leaving us a voicemail at 646-357-9318. We're always curious to know what you think. We're going to take one more break and then we'll see you back here for recommendations.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's wrap things up with recommendations. Elizabeth, what are you recommending this week?
I have a very boring but incredibly practical recommendation for this USB wall charger. And I know you're thinking, what does this have to do with parenting? If you are with children who have like so many devices, and then you have devices, and I just feel like everything has to be charged, like our headphones are, and sometimes we are places where there is only like one charger. So this little slim charger has four. I think you can also get it with five or six USB ports for one little plug in. And it folds, the plug folds in so that it's flat. It is like the best sanity saver. I can throw it in my bag. I have that. I can charge a whole bunch of things at once. It's like we're not hunting for outlets for everyone. We're not all over like an airport or a train station or a hotel room. Like this one thing can charge a whole bunch of stuff at once just by carrying this silly little iHome slim wall charger. Even if you don't get this one, I'm just telling you to have one cube instead of trying to keep track of like I don't know. It's like they're so hard to pack, that the little square bricks that go into the wall, this thing, total game changer. I have one in my bag and one at the house. It's so great.
I love it. I just checked it out. It's super like easy. You could just carry it in your purse. Super light and small. Yeah.
Then when their headphones die, you know, instead of being annoyed, you're just like, okay, great. I can charge that and my phone.
Listen, I my recommendation is kind of lame too, but it's a process. Here goes. Last summer, the cousins, the little cousins, like my kids, my cousin's kids, all decided they were going to make a movie. And they gave each other like responsibilities. Like Amelia wrote the script. Avery was in charge of directing. Sienna was costume. Logan was in charge of dinosaur noises because the script was, you know, about dinosaurs. Not only did they shoot this movie in 2 days, it took them an entire year to edit it, but they did it on their own. We just had the premiere this past weekend here in my home in the living room. It was a total blast. It encouraged all these kids to get together, to be collaborative, to use their imagination. I just gave them my phone. Literally, they shot the whole thing. They edited it on their laptops, and it was a success all around. I guess what I'm trying to push is, like, if you have an iPhone, if you have a whatever, if you have a smartphone with the capabilities of shooting video, the imagination it unleashed in these kids is beyond. Like, they had so much fun together. Summer is literally knocking on your door. Highly recommend to just task them. Why don't you make a movie? Why don't you make a music video to your favorite song? It took up the entire year for them to edit it together because they only wanted to edit it when they were in the same room. And, you know, that's very difficult to do. But the point is, they started something together. They ended something together. It was a badass little movie. We had a blast and highly recommend it. Encourage your kids to make a movie. You won't regret it.
You shared the movie and it's so, so cute.
Yeah, man. Check it out. It's on. I slacked it for y'all so you can see it. And it's super cute. It's super cute. I love it. I still can't believe this. I mean, like, I can believe it. The script that Amelia wrote, she has it like on her wall, and she's like, that's my first movie. And I don't know, it just sparked a lot of interest. And also, the youngest one of the crew is Logan, and Logan is writing part two this summer, and he is only 8 years old. And it really made him want to, like, mama, I'm going to read. And so he dictates it to his mom, and his mom has to write it. But he's into it. I don't know. I highly recommend it, man. It was very encouraging. And as a film major, it brought, like, a lot of, like, happiness to me. I was like, oh, my God, this is so exciting. This is how you write a script. So it was fun.
Plus, also, I mean, that's very realistic. Shoot in 2 days, edit for a year.
Yeah. Took them a whole year, man, to edit that. And they were so clever. They used Canva for title, which is free, by the way. Canva's free. Yeah. And they used the Canva for, you know, they got, like, pictures of dinosaurs. They credited. They did a dance scene at the end. I mean, they really put in the work. I'm really proud of them. It was really great.
It's amazing.
Just a small suggestion. That's really cool. If the kids get bored.
Jamila, what are you recommending?
I am recommending a binge watch for parents with tweens. Naima and I have been watching Jane the Virgin.
Oh, so good.
It's so good. It's so good. I watched the first couple seasons when it aired, and I hadn't seen it in years. And I think it came up as a suggestion when we finished Ugly Betty. So we love it. It's, you know, Naima was like, so I guess this is supposed to be like a modern telenovela. I'm like, that's exactly what it's supposed to be, you know? Lots of plot twists and turns and drama and a really funny narrator. It's just such a good show.
Betty LaFayette was, I mean, that was epic. And then when Ugly Betty came out, I remember just being like so proud. I was like, oh my God, Betty LaFayette is now Ugly Betty. That was a big deal.
Yeah. We want to hear what you guys are loving, listeners. So seriously, be sure to reach out and keep the conversation going. And that is our show. Please subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tell your friends. This episode of Care and Feeding is produced by Maura Curry. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. For Lucy Lopez, Elizabeth Newcamp, and Zach Rosen, I'm Jamila Lemieux. Thanks for listening.